Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Poetry Vlog. Today, you're going to get the podcast edition of my longer chat with Colleen Berner. Colleen's the co-editor of Shirley Magazine, and you'll get more info within the episode. I just want to make a quick note. This is an audio transcription of what is otherwise a YouTube episode. So if you want to check out the YouTube version, you'll get a lot of visuals that accompany it. And we refer to that throughout the episode. And you'll see the transitions, which are marked here with music. And you'll also get a few more links to content there. So if you're curious about the YouTube version, I'd rather watch it. It is in 4K. It was recorded with Mellon Foundation provided equipment, the second episode recorded on that equipment that's going live. And you'll find the link to that in the description of the podcast. Or you can just head on over to YouTube and search the Poetry Vlog, V-L-O-G. Because there's only one. All right, enjoy. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Poetry Vlog. In today's episode, sorry, we're friends. It's really hard when I do this with friends to not just like laugh the whole way through because those are the friendships I make. So let me try this again. In today's episode, you are going to learn about Shirley Magazine and the upcoming 13th issue. What is Shirley Magazine?
Shirley Magazine is an online literary magazine publishing three times a year for fiction stories that have a really interesting plot or idea behind them, but also really take into consideration the language behind them as well.
Perfect. And I also am a big fan of Shirley Magazine's visual aesthetic, which, to put a quick plug in for who's talking, Colleen is also an extremely modest writer and author. So I don't say this in the episode, but I'm going to say now before I forget, there's going to be links to Colleen's own work. Oh. Sorry, whether you like it or not, because Colleen is like actually one of my favorite writers, so that's going to happen as well. As always, go to thepoetryvlog.com for more info to sign up for the newsletters. I'll send you stickers and magnets because snail mail. And then the call for comments today, your favorite literary journal or magazine, right, and why, and not just because you like what they published, because that's just obvious.
And not but just because like, they've published you either.
I'm like, yeah.
Who does that?
That's just rude. Yeah. That's called self-promotion, the name of promoting someone else.
There's a time and a place.
Thank you. So don't do that either. Like, be serious about this. What do you read? Be honest about what you're reading, whether it's obvious or not, and be about why you like it, besides them publishing you. And as always, if you end this episode with more questions than answers, you can put those in the comments, and I'll be in dialogue with you there. All right. This was also the last interview at AWP. So bonus points for Colleen.
She did it.
Because there were many moments of like major brain fart and we went about an hour over. So friendship. All right, everybody, enjoy the episode and I'll be in dialogue with you in the comments. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Poetry Vlog. Today we have our chat with Colleen Berner. Colleen, will you introduce yourself and why you're here?
I'm Colleen Berner. I'm a non-binary writer and artist who was raised in the Midwest, and I live in Portland, Oregon. I've been editing Shirley Magazine for over 4 years now, and that's what we're going to talk about today.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you. And then I'm going to make you embarrassed for a minute and plug you in the sense of Colleen and I went to MFA program together in different genres, technically, and Colleen was the first fiction writer that I interacted with ever. No, I'm just kidding.
Broke through.
Where when I read their work, I was like totally blown away. And actually wanted to keep exchanging in a very like, oh, I learned from this person's writing way. And one of my favorite writers, sidebar, in a real
well,
way.
Yeah, and we didn't really talk until like your graduation reading.
No, pretty much
that was
not.
The first night that I remember talking to you.
Yeah. I know. And then we became fast friends. Became friends quickly and became fast in our friendship in terms of camaraderie and care. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we're doing this month is a collaboration with Shirley Magazine because it is a small journal and it makes a point of centering diverse voices and work that I like because it pushes those genre lines in interesting ways. And I know a lot of the viewers and listeners to this project are invested in narrative form and ways that you can still use tools of poetry in it and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I also know that lots of you are not fond of giant presses that make tons of money. So this is one way to use the platform to not just center marginalized poets, but marginalized publication forms.
Yeah.
So excellent. Will you talk a little bit about Shirley Magazine?
Yeah, so I started Shirley Magazine with Lauren Perez, who lives in LA. we met in the MFA program too while she was here briefly, and we actually went to AWP in Seattle, and it's sort of, we had kind of been talking about like what are our grand literary goals and writing goals and all that stuff, and we had just been kind of toying around with starting an online literary journal online because it's cheap and easier to distribute, and sort of spread the word about it, and also just because it's more malleable in that way too, where you can change the way that it looks, you can rearrange things if you want to. I think there's just more room for flexibility within it, so that was always appealing too. At its best, AWP is really an environment that has a lot of sharing and encouragement and can be really inspiring too. So we had gone to a couple panels on starting a small press or working with a small press or starting your own literary magazine or endeavor or something, and just kind of rode that wave of inspiration. And I was like, this feels good. Let's finally do this. And about a year after that, our first issue went live, and it's been a great journey.
I appreciate the candor sort of sponsor.
Just like, just to kind of like, you know, the two of us kind of came out of nowhere too. Yeah. Nobody knew about us. So just at the beginning, we, you know, purchased our domain name and started setting up how we wanted it to look like.
How did you decide on the aesthetic? Because you're also a visual artist.
Yeah.
Which I think folks don't know necessarily. If you follow my Instagram, the Matriarchy Textile was made by Colleen.
You can get one on Etsy.
Exactly.
I just wanted to make it look like something that I would want my work to be published in, because I know it can be really tough with an online journal just because things are sort of just flatter, mm-hmm. as opposed to like a nice, you know, letter-pressed, hand-sewn quarterly journal or something like that. There are definitely a few online mags that I'm like, yeah, I do want my work published in that, but I don't want it to look the way that it would look.
So if people are listening to the podcast version on the YouTube version, so if you're watching, I'll have a little scroll of the actual site going in the panel so you can get an idea of the aesthetic. I can attest to this, actually. I won't name names because thankfully or unthankfully, I've been published online enough times that nobody would be able to know, but many times when I've published poems online, I have hated how they look. And it's not that I mind it being online.
Right.
It's that I mind the aesthetic of the website. Yeah. I mind the aesthetic of how it ends up getting put on the page. Mm-hmm. And I don't end up wanting to, like, share that I got the poem published there because there's that part of me that just kind of cringes by how the poem's presented because it feels like a lot of
I'm sure it's different with poetry too, where formatting is even more more of part of the craft of it, so we just wanted it to look really clean and also to sort of center aesthetic as well. We have different image themes for each issue. We've made some of the images for it, our own, but most of them by now are just from public domain images, which thankfully there's just a wealth of that online, so we can just pull different shit from it all the time. Maybe a year in, we were like, we're going to change our font, and it's really going to be...
that's actually a really big different. Deal.
Changing and it was just like, small. We went from one sans serif to a different sans serif.
Oh, so
it
wasn't really that big of a deal. A lot of my students, for their final projects, need to create like multimodal online journals where they incorporate like sound, video, 3D printing object, like various ways. And I think the thing that oftentimes gets lost when it's not a print journal is exactly that. Like, how does your viewer and reader interact with the journal in a way that still recreates that kind of singular aesthetic? Like, Poetry Magazine is famous because it has that kind of like set aesthetic, even when they change the colors in art, right? And I think that you're tapping into online journals needing that as well. Can you talk about your selection process, both in terms of like when it's overwhelming, when it's difficult, like how, you know?
So we're still really small. We're on some lists and things, so word is getting around. But we definitely have dry spells where nobody's really sending us much, and then that's what Twitter is for, where you say, hey, we're out here, we want to publish your story about a dream that you had or inspired by.
Does it work? Like, do folks like respond pretty quickly to that?
Not like immediately, but there is sort of an uptick in things after we do a good old hashtag call for subs. We do get a whole lot of really excellent submissions, and most of the time we grab them before they get immediately withdrawn because somebody else grabbed them before we did, which happens and is hard. But our approach as editors is, I can't 100% speak for Lauren, but for me it's a lot about curation too, and just sort of figuring out what do we really like about this story and how can it maybe relate to other submissions that we're getting, because it's a kind of a freaky thing. I don't know how much of it is just like on a subconscious level, but almost every issue there's some sort of theme that kind of emerges that can sort of connect all the stories together, which is really, it's so interesting to like see that actually happen once it's like together as an issue, or even just in the process of thinking about how, you know, these three or four will work together. But just the idea of placing things next to each other more than sort of, I guess, a traditional editor view that's more of like, how can we take out these five paragraphs and add in two more that you haven't written yet or something like that.
So editors do that?
I feel like, you know, I haven't personally talked to a lot of editors actually about what their own processes are, but I do feel like that's sort of the general idea of an editor, is that it's like you really sort of work on the construction aspects of a story. And there have been times when we have gone down that route successfully, I would say, because, you know, we really come at it from a point of we want the story to be what the story's trying to be. And I think it helps that Lauren and I are both writers, so we kind of understand the writing process side of things too, where it's like you are noticing and a big finding of things and sort of an investigative process to figure out like where is this idea going to go, and so we just sort of try to emulate that. Lauren and I know pretty quickly whether or not we want something to you know, every once in a while it's like we need to talk about this one or something, but we tend to just follow our guts, and usually our guts are really aligned with each other, which is really helpful.
How do you take care of your own writing while doing like so much work curating everyone else's? Like, do you find that it impacts it at all? Because I feel like a lot of folks, especially being at AWP, they're like, I'm editor here, editor here. I have this book published. Like, there's all of these different, like, hats. But what's interesting to me, so for instance, I find, like, when I'm teaching, that the more I'm giving feedback on students' writing, the less I have the creative energy to do my own writing. And I'm curious, I mean, it's probably a pretty basic question answered somewhere else on the internet, but like, does it have a similar effect for you as, like, an editor when you're doing that kind of curating process?
I personally, I don't think so, maybe just because we are a magazine for short form. You know, if I'm reading novels especially, then that's where I'm like, I'm probably not writing very much if I'm in the middle of reading a novel, just because my brain is so much in that world. This probably also has a lot to do with it being an online thing, is just because it's essentially, I'm reading emails in a way, not to sort of downplay the quality of those emails or their contents, but it just happens in a less immersive way, I guess. I hope that's not offensive.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Another probably faux pas question. I'm going to ask it anyway because we're friends. there's a lot of literary journals out there, mm-hmm. like a lot. And he said mm-hmm. he went to AWP when you like thought like the world needed another one.
Yeah.
I don't disagree.
Needed.
Right?
Yeah, but I mean, it was
why?
More like...
Like, what? So, no, seriously, this is a really good question, though, I think, in some ways, because I think people forget that that's an early step that a lot of students, especially, because, like, don't really know how to respond to. So, again, this is, like, if I have students creating mock-up, like, online journals, part of their reflection writing is how their particular journal is doing something that they don't think other journals are quite doing.
Yeah.
So what, when you were talking with Lauren and you two kind of brainstormed this, what were the, like, this is why we want to do this one ourselves? Like, what were the goals? Or, like, alternatively, if it wasn't so much about another journal needing to be out there, what were you hoping to get out of it for yourselves that you couldn't get out of, you know?
Yeah. I don't think we ever, at least explicitly, talked about it in terms of, like, the world needs our Shirley magazine. It might have more to do with... I mean, it's named Shirley after Shirley Jackson, who was a writer that Lauren and I bonded over really quickly. She told me to read We Have Always Lived in the Castle, and she, like, recited the first couple lines for me, and I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I really need to read that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, like, rocked my world in that way. And so just thinking about what Shirley Jackson was writing about is just these, like, not only horror, but also, like, she was really concerned with, like, the domestic realm too. She wrote so much about being a mother, and that's how she made her living a lot. And so she's just this really interesting intersection of realities in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
And so we were just sort of like, well, Shirley Jackson has been dead for a long time. So she's not writing anymore. But what if we were sort of like a home for stories that sort of emulated that same investigation of alternate universes, but horror and just the questions that arise in there, or just strangeness and surrealism, just weird
things. Still maintaining like a very poetic quality to the language.
Yeah.
So, like, for instance, from the outside, oftentimes when I find that there's literature on the sort of surreal or the kind of uncanny, right, and so on, it's not always with a close attention to the language itself. Mm-hmm. It feels like there's a lot of focus on trying to create an uncanny image or, like, and so forth.
Yeah.
What I like about Shirley, and something I do think it's doing, is that there's a very close attention to aesthetic in terms of the, like, actual layout, right, and the art, but also in terms of the type of writing that you end up publishing in, which is actually a very specific niche area, because there are a lot of online journals that are like, send us your weirdest, and they really do mean just like weird,
really fucked up things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they might not necessarily mean like there's a certain there's a very clear attention to how the way the language is arranged will impact the body of the reader. Right, or create different sensations.
Yeah.
Whereas I think something that you and Lauren do well is you find work that has that attention or that kind of layer, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, when we first came up with our spiel that's on our about page now, it's always started with just about how we need plot, but we also need the language about it. Maybe just because of the environment that she and I met in, where an MFA program is so much just about exposing yourself to different types of writing. So we were lucky enough to have some more hybrid texts introduced just to you. And I think that really changed things, because it does show that, oh, you can do fiction, but you can also sort of write it from a poetic angle.
Yeah.
Or you can write it slant in that way.
Yeah.
Too.
And it can be like fiction on the uncanny or horror and so forth, and not just be like canned into genre fiction.
Yeah, not, it doesn't have to just be stage directions and that kind of thing. It can really explore. I think it's always been more about exploring sort of the psychological side of horror surrealism too, just because that is really where language can just sort of like fester in the best way. And just sort of, like, grow into something else.
Yeah.
Too. So, and that's just where it gets the most interesting. Because it's then interesting sort of on the from a broad view, but then also a more granular view too.
Yeah, I'm obviously a fan of Shirley, so I wasn't asking that, and I'm like, why did you create another?
You know, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. No, I was like, I do think you all are doing something very specific.
Yeah.
Right, and I don't think that there is such a thing as too many journals. I think it's more like there's such a thing as journals where there isn't an attention to what's being curated in order to create, like, to think about the reader's experience. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that you all do that. So for wrap up, what issue's coming out? What do people find in it? Like, what are the details so that now we can be like, go read Shirley.
Issue 13 is coming out at the end of April. Our reading window is year round, so you can always send us stuff. It's got some real bangers in it, this issue. I say that about every issue. I do think we get, like, incrementally better with every single one. I'm sure it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
So.
I'm excited for it. For everyone on here, if you haven't already, there's been flash briefings from previous authors published in Shirley, as well as upcoming authors in Shirley. I still get asked flash briefings ? So I'm going to clarify again. There's a podcast version of this. Those of you listening are probably rolling your eyes, but there is. And in the podcast only version on most weekdays, not all because I'm a person, there's 2-minute-ish readings. And usually whenever there's an episode coming up. So for the 4 days leading up to an episode, I'll ask that person. Sometimes I forget to ask to basically send in a recording of them reading other people's work and their own work, or just their own work, depending on how they're feeling. So when I reached out to Colleen, I was like, y'all should, like, have your writers put in flash briefing readings, and then I'll just, every time a flash briefing goes, promote your journal. And then I was like, I'll be in Portland for AWP, so let's also make an episode about it. So it turned into, like, a whole thing. But originally, and exactly, which is not a small thing for either of us, I think. We can both be snails sometimes on our dreams. But if you're watching this and you're like, rad, you can go listen to a couple weeks worth, actually. So a lot of folks submitted plenty of readings.
Oh,
like,
so
April is basically Shirley Magazine month at this point, which is also National Poetry Month, which I like because it's fiction writing that pays attention to poetry, which deconstructs the binaries of fiction and poetry. And I'm also excited because it helps us think about when we read fiction as much as poetry. So the practice of physically reading. All of that wordiness is to say, go to anchor.fm/thepoetryvlog or wherever you podcast. It's literally just called The Poetry Vlog. And you'll find by the time this is up, several weeks worth of these tiny 2-minute readings from Shirley Magazine. And there's gonna be links to the issue that they're in. And if it's the upcoming issue, I'll retroactively go back and create a link to it.
Awesome.
And there's also links in the description here below. The call for comments today is, what is your favorite online journal? And why? And when you say why, it can't just be because they publish great work. You need to think about, like, is it about something about their aesthetic? Is there something about their selection process? Is there something, like, something a little bit more tangible than just you like their work?
Yeah.
And as always, if this just left you with more questions, leave that in the comments and I'll answer them if I know the answers. Or I'll point you to someone who might know the answers if I don't. All right. Are we good?
We're good.
All right. Thanks, everybody, and have a lovely day.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.